Good afternoon. We'll open the House Committee on Veteran Services Emergency Preparedness. The day is now, Tuesday, May 28th. Got that going for us. I want to let everybody know, too, if you are here for the public hearing possible work session of Senate Bill 422 regarding rural fire districts, we do not have the votes to move that bill. We did move the Dash 2 amendments into it last hearing. I have talked with the good Senator Prezansky about some of the complications that are with this bill on 422 and explained to him that we just did not have the votes on committee to move that. I will commit to trying to work with the Senator to find a solution, but we can't get comfortable. And I want to be clear, too, that he is trying to help out a pocket of his constituency, and it can be very difficult because currently the only option that stands is for the sheriff to have a levy of the entire county and to raise the tax on that. He was hoping the Dash 2s would make this to a point we could get comfortable, but to be honest, it's just it's an impossible lift at this point. And with respect to the fire service and our districts, I think it's better that we just do not move Senate Bill 422. So we will not be discussing that any further. And as of today, that bill will go no further. And if any committee members were extremely supportive and would like to find a way to get there, I'm sure the good senator would like to talk to you. But I think that we have all at one point expressed some concerns about how this bill might be implemented and also how it could impact some of the special districts out there that have worked really hard for their funding issues. So respect his work and the good senator is a legislator, but unable to get there on Senate Bill 422. So that might relieve some of your phone calls you've been getting from the fire service and some of the email too. But for now, and as of now in this session, 422 will go no further. Okay? So thank you for that, and I just thought I would explain that on the record again out of respect for the individuals involved. And with that, we will move to Senate Bill 33, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 33.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very quickly, there's a Dash 2 amendment that has no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement issued that, in effect, has a minimal impact on the agencies and an unknown impact on OMD. The bill would add 13 agencies to and remove one from the list of those agencies required to designate an individual with authority to allocate resources to act as a liaison with the Office of Emergency Management, and it also creates a task force on resilience plan implementation.
Thank you for that. And this does have a sub referral as well.
Yes, a subsequent referral has been added to Joint Ways and Means due to the task force.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And so with that, I would entertain a motion.
Chair Matthews, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 33 dated May 20th, 2013.
Thank you. Representative Fagan moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 33 dated May 20th, 2013. Is there any discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to say I'm really happy that this has come forward from and Representative Reed's been integral in this along with Senator Boquist. This enables a group to continue working on resilience, and it relieves OSPAC of that further. They'll be involved, I'm sure, but it relieves them of the onus of getting this going, and it's great. It just includes more people, and I'm happy to see this happen.
Well, I appreciate that. And as you know, we'll have some further discussion of informational meetings and whatnot, but the work will continue. And each time they come before us, we learn that much more. And this will actually set prioritization for the state and get us moving forward on the issue. So thank you for that.
I agree.
Any further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Matthews, I move Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Fagan moves Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Boone.
I just wanted to alleviate any worries that my only motion forward on this will be in this building will be seafloor mapping. I'm adding resilience to that, so if you see me coming, that's what it's going to be about. And
wonderful.
Thank you again. And I just have to say, with the unfortunate event that happened in Oklahoma this last week, this just points out how much being prepared counts.
I appreciate that. And you know, even as near as the bridge failure over the weekend, you know, which is, again, trying to identify just what exactly, where are we vulnerable and what types of things can happen. And if they do happen, how will we be impacted? And so I think, thank you for bringing that point forward.
Just one bridge.
Just one single, yeah. Right, exactly. Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. You know, Oklahoma was prepared. It could have been substantially worse because that community, I think, in 1999 got the same dose of medicine.
That's
so
correct.
Built mm-hmm. to be prepared. And the only, I mean, it's amazing that they just lost 24 people because the devastation was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might add to Representative Esquivel's comments, the one school that didn't have the, they had a safe area, but it wasn't for that kind of event. It wasn't good enough. But it shows us what we really have to do here in making our public buildings and schools safe with the rehabs that we're going to be doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, the lives lost, one thing, but folks, you know, that and devastating. But of course, you know, if I lose my car keys, I go crazy. I can't imagine losing your entire house, all your property, all your things, and having cars flying into buildings. It's just nuts. And as the good representative said, it's happened to them before. And given where they live and what occurs, it will probably happen again. And it would be nice for us to be as prepared as possible. And I think that's what we're heading towards with Senate Bill 33. Any other further discussion? No further discussion? Seeing none. Mike, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Excused.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you with that, and we will now close the work session on Senate Bill 33. And again, thank you to Ms. Edwards for finding that relating clause and helping this group get Senate Bill 33 moving forward. Thank you. And we will close the work session. And we will be opening an informational meeting. And before we begin, I'll be passing the gavel to the good vice chair here shortly. At 1:30, the governor will be signing Senate Bill 461. So I'll be leaving for a short time and then coming back. I want you to understand how important I think the information we're about to hear is to the committee. And but we also have a bill signing at the same time. And this is the time of the year when we get things kind of competing on the calendar. Thank you with that, and we'll open an informational meeting. And Mr. Mann, if you will, and Mr. Smith, if you'd like, we'll review the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services final report, recommendations, and next steps. Thank you. I did it just because I love the sound of it, so don't be surprised. I just gaveled you in for an informational meeting. Are you ready?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're discussing the 2008 Governor's Task Force on Veterans Services, for which I was the project officer, which meant I was the head lackey. I was the staff guy. And what I want to do today is kind of bring you through where we were, what we did, where we are, and turn it over to my director, who can tell you where we're going. Based upon all this information, you will recall that at the time in 2008, it's very different than 2013, where we were in providing services for our veterans. We had the two of the 162 come back from Iraq. They lost 9 KIA, 82 Purple Heart, and it was overwhelming to the system about how to take care of them. In fact, they weren't well taken care of when they came home in 2005, 2006. So by 2008, we needed to find out just what was going on in the state, where there were gaps. So the governor at the time, Governor Kulongowski, said, get out and find out what's happening in Oregon. Find out what's working, find out what's not working, find out where there are gaps. The task force was managed by Paul Evans, who was the policy advisor for the governor at the time, and there were 26 members on that task force, representing just about everybody you could represent. We quickly learned that we needed to go out into the community, and we did town halls in 24 communities. We went east, south, coast, north, everywhere you could go. And we did two types of town halls. In the afternoon, we met with leaders of the community, whether they be elected or otherwise, to sit down and determine how they viewed their community. Then we met with the general public, primarily veterans, in the evening. And we did this over a span, I think, of about 3.5 months. And we heard very similar things as we went. As the task force finished its work in December 2008, it put out a report, and it made findings and recommendations. There were 12 findings surrounding the areas of employment, education, veteran benefits, transportation, homelessness, reintegration, outreach, and women veterans. From there, we determined that there were 23 separate recommendations we made to the governor around those issues, and there were very specific things. That next legislative session, we came to legislature with a number of bills. Many of you will remember, I think we had 39 bills that we came in with. And what I want to do is kind of go through how the process evolved over the next 2 to 3 sessions, because the recommendation list kind of grew and we expanded our reach into some areas. So let me just kind of quickly run through some of the accomplishments that the legislature, and this is primarily legislative work, that you accomplished on behalf of that task force. A big issue was the no wrong door idea, the idea that a veteran, when they go into a government building, shouldn't be told you're in the wrong place. And we've partnered with all the other state agencies to make sure that they ask, did you serve? And we've made partnerships through legislative action and through other partnerships with agencies to provide ODVA names and a contact information of veterans so we can do broader outreach. Matter of fact, 2 bills this session deal with DMV and DHS, which you've already heard, so that's going to expand that outreach exponentially. We expanded the Veterans Preference Law, and we passed a bill that said that if a veteran had transferable skills and met the minimum qualifications and special qualifications for any public job, they automatically got an interview. We had determined that veterans were not getting into the interview process because nobody could discern their military skills and how they related to a public job. And so we worked on a bill to alleviate that situation. We passed legislation saying that licensing boards could use military skills and knowledge and education to license people coming out of the military. One of the great things that happened after that bill passed was DMV said that if you were a truck driver in the military, you could be a truck driver in the civilian world, and you automatically get your CCLD or CDL.
CDL.
That was a great big step because there was a lot of pushback, if you recall, at the time, and we're still working with the licensing boards to make sure that that transfer happens, and we're calling that the direct licensing bill. We worked with ODOT and the DHS folks on medical transportation for veterans using the existing brokerage system. And right now there's a pilot project that ODOT funded by itself for $100,000 to transport veterans to and from their medical appointments using this brokerage system. That was a great victory. And then we convinced the federal government that the VA actually could use surplus vans from ODOT for their medical centers. As you know, non-ambulatory veterans, those in wheelchairs and with multiple sclerosis and other issues, had no transportation in the state. So we provided these vans to VA, and they were able to then have non-ambulatory transportation for these veterans. There was about 700 veterans that are wheelchair-bound, that they were be able to be helped. We created the short-lived Campus Veteran Service Officer Program and put Campus Veteran Service Officers on those campuses and help veterans acclimate to campus and get their GI Bill working and those type of things. We helped create more veteran courts and veteran dockets, making sure that veterans who were acting out of their military traumas, primarily post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injuries, when they were identified in the process, they could move into this veteran treatment court area and get the kind of help they needed for their counseling from the VA and from us and other providers instead of going to jail. And that has been a boon. Klamath County, Marion County, Lane County, are already up and running. Deschutes County is working on it, as is Multnomah and other jurisdictions. The legislature funded a suicide prevention campaign through ODVA, as well as a campaign to do education on traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, and military sexual trauma. That was highly successful, and we know that because all the hotline numbers while we were doing that campaign lit up. They had an exponential increase in phone calls. So that education program was well received. Representative Escobar passed a bill that said that we should be tracking veteran suicides through our vital statistics. And I think for the first time we actually got those numbers in this last set of vital statistics, which was extremely helpful for us to determine if there's causes and any dots we can connect to determine causality of this. We expanded services at veteran clinics. You know, the Salem Clinic here for veterans is going to be moving. It's going to be doubling its size, and it's actually going to have x-ray. So veterans from the Salem area will not have to travel to Portland to get an x-ray. I mean, that seems like a little thing, but it's a major thing when you have transportation issues for veterans. We eliminated the 30-year restriction on ODVA home loans, so the Vietnam generation could get a home loan. That was a big deal. This session, we've passed bills to allow ODVA to get into the federal VA loan guarantee business, to allow younger veterans to get a home loan through us. This session, you're working on a bill that would allow in-state tuition rates for out-of-state veterans. That was something that took a couple sessions. There was a little pushback on that. Representative Matthews had a bill that created an unfair trade practice of taking advantage of elderly and disabled veterans and their spouses. And believe me, I've used that bill. We've worked with DOJ and BOLI to use that on folks who have tried to take advantage of our veterans. They created Fort Oregon through the military department, and we've, even though that's kind of gone away, we've expanded that to having a web-based service provider. Right now at ODVA, we are offering every county that has a county veteran service officer their own website with their own local resources, so that when any veteran locally in any community, any community in a county, goes to that local site, they're going to find all their local resources in one place. And that is something we're working right now. Beyond the bills, we did more. We started partnering with agencies at the county and state level to share information. You know, one of the things you hear in government all the time is we can't share information because of FERPA or these other laws about confidentiality. One of the big loopholes, if you will, in the HIPAA laws is you can share information with your business partners. And I started convincing people that we're all business partners and we should share information, and that has taken hold, and information is flowing back and forth like never before, which is vital when we share clients. We started training law enforcement on how to work and deal with veterans. This was really important because when a police officer pulls you over, the first thing you want to do is see your hands, right? For an Iraq combat veteran who's kicking down doors in Iraq, the first thing they want to do when they come to you is see your hands. It was causing huge issues in the field. So training officers how to manage these potential conflicts, I think, de-escalated a lot of potential conflicts. We started training employers and HR specialists on veteran culture and why they're great employees, but they're going to be a little bit different in how they speak and how they approach a job. We started training hospice workers how to deal with veterans and end-of-life issues. We share with them that at the end of life, your most powerful memories are going to be the ones you retain. For combat veterans, that's going to be their military experience. And so you're going to see late-onset post-traumatic stress in hospice patients. And we have to be prepared for that, so we train them what to do in those cases. We added training for our county veteran service officers because we realized that we could do a better job in the claims work we do. We started emphasizing women veterans and including working with VA to provide gender-specific medical center women veteran clinics that are specifically for women veterans. We started making non-traditional strategic partnerships, both in the private sector and the public sector. One of the groups I work with routinely is Department of Justice Child Support Division, because we have veterans deploying who have child support orders. And we need to work with them about how we're going to implement those when somebody's deployed.
Excuse me.
We changed the paradigm of government. Government is, if you come see us, we'll help you. We said instead, we're going to go to the veterans and meet them where they are. And we started doing just a tremendous amount of outreach, reaching out to where veterans were, incarcerated veterans, homeless veterans, student veterans. Anywhere we could find veteran groups, we'd find them. And we started engaging the faith-based community. When a homeless veteran moves into an apartment using the HUD-VASH voucher, they don't have furniture. They don't have pots and pans and silverware. They don't have a bed. They have nothing. And there isn't much in government that can provide that, but the faith-based community has all of that stuff. And so we started asking the faith-based community to stand up and provide that. We also asked the faith-based community, would you embrace a National Guard unit and adopt one and provide them those Thanksgiving dinners they need? Can you provide them Christmas presents for their kids when they can't afford it? Can you adopt these units? And it's been very, very successful. What we've found is, while the legislature's passed a lot of bills and while we've done a lot of good things, it takes a little while for everyone to embrace the idea of new legislation. And so we have some areas where we're still working with different agencies. On veterans preference, for example, I still get calls monthly about how the preference process works. We still get calls about that interview bill. Do I really have to interview all the veterans? It depends. We are still out in the community helping do these things. We've come a long way since 2008 and that task force. We're at an exciting point in this period, because the war in Iraq is over, the war in Afghanistan is winding down, and the temptation is going to be for the window to close and everyone to say, now that we're done with that, we can move on to the next shiny thing. Well, in our business, we know that veteran care, veteran services, is a lifetime event. We have Vietnam veterans coming forward for the first time in 40 years. I still have World War II veterans I'm working with, even this morning on the phone with one 92-year-old veteran trying to help him with his VA health care. It never ends. And so I guess the cautionary tale is, while we've done great work, I think we've set up a great infrastructure in this state to provide great benefits to veterans. I think all the groups are talking and working together that need to talk and work together. I think we've tore down silos that used to exist where now it is kind of one for all. But there's a lot more to do, because there's a lot more veterans coming home. And the problem of post-traumatic stress, the problem of traumatic brain injury, orthopedic issues, all these things that we deal with, doesn't go away because a war ends. And so that's where we are as of today, and I'll turn it over to my director to tell you what we're doing next.
So, Vice Chair Fagan, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And just as we paused this Memorial Day and this Memorial Day weekend to honor all those who have given their lives in the service of our country and our state, it's important to pause and reflect where we've been over the last decade. And truly to celebrate what has been a lot of success in the name of our veterans and their families. I believe we do have one of the best support networks in the nation for our veterans and their families. And at the state level, it is largely due to folks like Tom Mann, Paul Evans, Colonel McRae from the Oregon National Guard, who lost his son in Iraq and was inspired to serve on the reintegration team, Master Sergeant Vinny Jacques, and then Jim Booker at employment. Just a few of the leaders that have really led this charge over the last 5 to 10 years, building up what has been a tremendous network of support. That said, we know, and Tom alluded to it, we know that we still have challenges for our veterans and their families. We are at this unique turning point where the wars wind down, and it is right when we need to be rolling up our sleeves, but often when both the political will and sometimes our community will can begin to fade on veterans' issues. And the central dynamic that I think we've always tried to solve, and we've tried to solve it in a lot of different ways, has been identifying what resources are out there for our veterans and their families. That's both the available resources as well as the gaps that we're trying to plug. How do we connect the diverse partners that are providing those resources, and then doing innovative outreach and actually being able to connect and link those resources to our veterans? And for the three main areas, you know, in the Marines, we always had the rule of three in terms of three Marines on a fire team, three fire teams on a squad, three squads in a platoon, something that you can wrap your mind around. For veterans, we know largely it's going to be around health care, both physical and mental health, their continuing education, and their employment. But when you actually look at ODVA's core programs, we've got claims and counseling under the Veteran Services Division with Tom. That's our core mission in terms of linking folks to their federal benefits. We have our home loan program, which was the original founding of the agency back in 1945, where we offer loans to veterans and their families. And then the Veterans Home in the Dalles for long-term care, skilled nursing. When you look at those three core programs for ODVA, they don't necessarily speak to every need that our veterans face across healthcare, education, and employment. And much of the work that you heard through the task force reimagined veteran services much more broadly than just specific federal claims work. We are not, at the state level, we are not the federal VA in terms of $150 billion plus budget. We are not the county veteran service officers that are on the ground doing service delivery at the local level and actually building the local relationships to drive those resources. ODVA needs to position itself as an umbrella of support in between those two partners and making sure that we are more supportive at the regional and local level. Veterans' issues are national in scope, but they will be solved community by community. And the governor's talked about this in a lot of different areas. You know, we call it community solutions, regional solutions. Imagine if you had a Tom Mann in every one of our counties that thought of themselves as that belly button of that community on all things veterans. That is a powerful model. Many of our county veteran service officers view themselves in that role, and we can still go further working with our county commissions to get further down that road. But we have to have the humility that ODVA does not have all the answers. If we are looking to the solution simply to the task force model at a state level, we will have failed, and it needs to be driven down to the local community, where we're coordinating and linking partners, reducing duplication and filling in the gaps, and improving outreach. We have much to do in terms of a larger strategic plan. Taking over as a new agency director in midstream of legislative session, that will be ongoing work, but it's already begun in terms of our budget. Working closely with both our House and Senate Veterans Policy Committees and the Subcommittee on Ways and Means, Transportation and Economic Development for us, we have passed out our budget from that subcommittee with a strong support for the fund shift that makes sure we fund our core veteran services model at the state level, not on our veterans' home loan program reserves, but with general fund dollars. That's not necessarily new funds, but it makes sure that it's ongoing work and we can provide that center of gravity at ODVA for all the above and beyond, beyond programs work. They've also been very supportive of actual new funds for counties. $1 million is not much in terms of the larger state budget, but is a pass-through to the counties that will increase by roughly a third of what we pass through to our county veteran service officers. And rather than just simply do a straight population-based metric in terms of how those funds get divvied up between our urban and rural counties, really looking at how do we drive extended outreach outcomes for the older generations of veterans that Tom mentioned that have never claimed, some of them have never claimed their benefits, to also catching and reaching out to the newest veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. So really looking at how do we drive interviews at the county veteran service officer level, get them out from behind their desks and partnering with the diverse partners in the healthcare, education, and employment fields to really make sure that we're reaching our veterans and driving. So $3.5 million in this current budget we passed through to the counties, looking to add another $1 million on top of that, knowing that that little bit that we invest as a state draws back federal funds to the tune of $1.9 billion that are flowing back in terms of health benefits, education benefits, and direct cash payments for disabilities and pensions. Still hopeful to jangle loose the raffle bill from the subcommittee, looking at trying to draw those dollars. Roughly, it would be about $1.2 million, we think, raised. Trying to build further partnerships in the education realm, knowing that many of our veterans are getting going with a difficult economy, going back to community college, going back to universities, making sure not that we have a campus program that's doing the claims and counseling work that our county partners do, but making sure our campus veteran representatives are able to create a welcoming and soft landing at our campuses for our veterans. Even without new funds, we are grateful for those new dollars that we hope to get out of the full Ways and Means Committee and out of the House and Senate. Even without new funds, much of what Tom talked about in terms of that task force, it's a mentality, it's a paradigm, not necessarily spending new resources to view yourself as that center of gravity and to do that work. So we need to continue to position ODVA as that center of gravity for all states veterans. Not just limit ourselves to our core programs, and really know that it is less about us as an agency or department, and more about the broader networks that we're trying to support and have thrive at the local level. We know $150 billion plus budget at the federal VA level isn't enough. We could double our state budget, and it wouldn't be enough for the work. We need to tap into the broader networks if we're actually going to be able to address the wide-ranging issues that our veterans face. Tomorrow we'll be plugging along that path with a veteran summit. So we've been separate from the task force model, we've often been heavily reliant on the National Guard's reintegration team and their process. As DOD begins to ramp down both on personnel and on just simply on their operations, funding potentially dries up on that reintegration front, and it feels like a natural time for that work to come, that kind of coordination work to come back home to roost at ODVA. So we'll be convening, not necessarily, you know, a lot of times we have veteran service outreach in terms of veterans are coming to get linked to their services. Tomorrow's summit, and we're going to have Chair Matthews and Senator Boquist help us kick it off, tomorrow's is more about connecting the broad range of diverse service providers to really be able to show the model of how do we get these coordinated resources better at the local level. And we're going to be talking about where we can add value from ODVA. It's going to be on that grant basis. It's going to be showing what we've been able to do when you do coordinate. ODVA reaches out to our community colleges, Department of Transportation, DHS, DOC. That's exactly what we need our veteran service officers doing at the local level. And one of the tools, so we've had a lot of different names to this work in terms of Yellow Ribbon Program, Reintegration Team, Ford Oregon. There's the Oregon Military Support Network. We have 211. They've been good, but they've also kind of spiked and come and gone. I think, knowing that ODVA has been around since 1945, we need to embed that information sharing and coordination of resources at a state level, knowing that it will be populated from the local resources, but providing the infrastructure and the models that can be supportive to push out that public information. And we know that from our own work in our public affairs work that Tom helped start when he was in that position, and now Nicole Hoft continuing on our public information team. Knowing what we've done, the state websites are often very static and flat and don't allow you to interact with the community, but be able to take our website off that, so OregonDVA.com, and be able to have a more interactive website where we've got a blog, where we've got Facebook links, where we're pushing out not just our own programs that are at the state level, but truly trying to connect the broader resources. And we're looking at bringing that model to our county partners. Often, a county veteran service officer simply has that flat page of their contact information. Much of the structure we can provide at ODVA and share those resources, give them a tool where they have the resources in their head. They connect folks much broader than just into their claims and counseling. To be able to put that online, though, so that not just our younger veterans, but we've seen at the state level, our older veterans, the Vietnam generation, are some of our biggest users when we've signed them up for e-delivery and pushing out that information. Just a much different model than we've had in terms of that Vet News newspaper and our benefits magazine. It's just a more interactive and strategic communications effort that really is going to push outreach. And it frees up the work for the veteran service officers to do more in-person outreach and actually being that belly button of the larger network. So it is an exciting time. We don't claim to have all the answers. I think that's powerful. And it really will be a bubbling up process, I think, through the summit model and then really looking not at trying to do another veterans task force, but really between the state and the VSOs at the county level, trying to do more of a listening tour as we get out of session, partnering with the community colleges to host those, to really see where are there still gaps that we can advocate for at the state level in future sessions and continue to drive the good work. And happy to take any questions for either Tom or myself.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Hit me with that, but
probably for Tom, since you're the one that's been working with me the longest on it. Wasco County has been the area where this has really bubbled up. There's a strong volunteer group there, and their hearts are in the right place and contributing, I think, 350 hours a month or more in volunteer time at the VSO office. Have we made any gains? I know a lot of it's federal, HIPAA, that kind of stuff, as you mentioned earlier, and other relationships between agencies. Have we made any gains in making it easier for a VSO to come in and ordain some volunteers that can actually be really strong administrative help within the offices so that we can maximize those man hours?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Huffman, I've kind of had a change of heart when it comes to that issue. I've watched what Wasco County is doing, and I'll be honest, when you start talking about volunteers, you get a little nervous because of the type of information that are in the files. We've had some volunteers in the past abuse that information, and so there was concern. But the change of heart came around realizing that the numbers we're looking at in terms of the returning veterans to Oregon will overwhelm us. When the federal government releases 1 million troops in the next 5 years, and Oregon gets its share, which could be 30,000 or more, and that's on top of the ones we're getting, plus the fact that we're asking DMV and DHS to provide us all their veteran information, the work for those county veteran service officers is going to increase exponentially, as well as the state. So my change of heart has been, we're going to need all hands on deck. So what I've been thinking about and talking to the different folks in the communities, in the counties about, is how do we create a good volunteer program that has some guardrails? And I think Wasco County's done it, to be honest with you. I've talked to Russ, who's the service officer up there. I've talked to Eric Belt, who runs the Service Officers Association. And one of the models that we're looking at is the volunteer model. The key to that, however, is ensuring that the people you bring in as volunteers are vetted well enough that you trust them with that level of HIPAA information. There's always going to be the rogue person that causes you trouble. That's just the reality of life. It is wrangling cats sometimes. But if a community were to choose the volunteer model, and I think Wasco's been the one to kind of show it works, I'm no longer really opposed to that, but I would tell a county, here are the guardrails. Make sure you vet them. Make sure they're signing documents saying that they understand HIPAA issues and the law. Train them up in that stuff. Don't let them write claims, but let them do other things. And those other things include, let them fill out a SF-180 to get military records. Let them fill out a 1010EZ to help a veteran get their health care benefits. Let them do that minor work that doesn't need a service officer, so that takes pressure off the service officer so they can handle the claims work that they need to do. Let the volunteers do the military, medical, and legal research, because there's a ton of research that goes into what we do. They can do all those things. One of the things we may want to think about is ODVA, where we come in as that umbrella, is when counties want to have a volunteer base, we go out and train the volunteers in some of this more aggressive work. And so there are some guardrails. They're learning it from the state how to do it, and they're learning it the right way. So I got to be honest, I was the barrier on the volunteers for a long time, because I was just concerned about how do you maintain the integrity of the confidentiality piece. But I've had a change of heart, and so we're kind of moving forward this other direction.
Thank you.
Representative Escudero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I learned something this weekend that was almost staggering to me. You know, we talked about suicides. We were talking about that, and the fact that we've had an accelerated amount of people taking their own life, and especially an astronomical amount of Vietnam veterans. But I was watching a documentary this weekend. I think it was the 82nd Airborne, that the average soldier in World War II had 10 days of combat per year. The average soldier in the 82nd Airborne in Vietnam had 240 days a year. So now it's kind of starting to fit together of what is happening to those veterans, because 240 out of 365, that's a pretty rough schedule. So I thought that was a very interesting statistic. I was wondering where we're at. Are we keeping track of that today in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Madam Vice Chair and Representative Escobar, it's a great set of numbers. In World War II, we would engage and pull back, in Vietnam, it was constant patrolling.
Whatever day you wake up.
Constant patrolling. In Iraq, Afghanistan. What's unique about Iraq, Afghanistan, you could say every day is a combat patrol, because even if you're driving
these are actual combat.
Yeah.
This is when they were under fire.
Right. If you look at the post-traumatic stress issues, though, what the triggers are, driving a truck when you think you can get blown up by an IED every single day for 365 days will create that level of anxiety to cause those chemical imbalances that cause the post-traumatic stress. So for your grunts that are pulling security and those type of things, I don't think it's as much combat as Vietnam in terms of those combat patrols. But I will tell you that the environment's a lot different in terms of the dangers of those IEDs. If you look at the combat deaths we've suffered in Iraq, Afghanistan, most of them have been through IEDs, not direct skirmish.
Yeah. Interesting, I thought. Interesting.
Very interesting, yes.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment that the list of legislative accomplishments that the department went through is truly impressive. And if you haven't had an opportunity to share that with your counterparts in other states, I think you've done some tremendous things. I think a number of them are innovative, and there may be other states that could benefit from the ground that you've already plowed. So great, great, great job.
Could you, Madam Chair, Leo and Dutchman, could we get a copy of those?
Absolutely.
You send it off to us all? Appreciate it.
Anything else?
No, I was going to ask the same thing, so.
We'll get you the whole list.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for the informational meeting. At this point, I'll close the informational meeting. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Anyone else want to come along my chair?
Okay. Madam Chair, Cameron mentioned tomorrow. So what's tomorrow?
So tomorrow will be, Madam Vice Chair Fagan, Representative Boone, tomorrow we'll be hosting the Veterans Summit from 9 to noon at the Salem Convention Center.
Oh, right.
And that's where we're pulling together the service providers, okay, well beyond just the veteran service organizations, but in terms of the community colleges, mental health providers, nonprofits, business community employers, really looking at trying to start that relationship back up and take that mantle of the reintegration team work and those summits going forward.
So Convention Center, 9 to noon. Okay, thank you. Thanks. Madam Vice Chair Fagan, I move that the rules be suspended to reopen the work session and allow Representative Parrish to vote on the motion to vote to move Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Boone moves that the rules be suspended to reopen the work session and allow Representative Parrish to vote on a motion to move Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Are there any objections? If no objection, Representative Parrish, how do you vote?
Aye.
Sorry, do you need to reclose the work session on Senate Bill 33? Is there anything further? All right, well then I will close the meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness.
Just suspended.